on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial President, Financial Advisor Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody. It is August 14th, a Friday, and I welcome you to InvestTalk. I want to thank you for meeting with us today. We're here at the Friday meeting already. That means that our premium newsletter went out this morning, goes out every Friday in the email boxes. There were a lot of economic numbers released this week, but you would have to say it was a week in which the stock market reacted to the Chinese currency manipulation. That was part of the first section of the newsletter. And that's what happened. You saw a big up day in our market on Monday, and it started up again on Tuesday before it turned all around and gave it all back. Practically all of it anyways. And so I cover a number of the things that move the market, or what was happening this week, productivity numbers, different economic numbers. And each week I do a quick summary of a KPP financial position on the market, you know, just briefly what we're doing. And always we have two stock ideas that we mention, always there. Portfolio management section, which I talked about the cycle of emotions in the market, what people go through, you know. There's basically four emotions that they run through as the market goes up and down. It's just interesting to note. And finally, in the consumer watch section, I talk about debt. Debt when someone dies, not very pleasant topic. But what happens to debt? If you have debt and you die, who has to pay it? Or does it have to get paid? That's kind of interesting. That was in the newsletter came out this Friday. If you'd like to try a subscription for a month, you can do it with your money back guarantee. You don't have to take it. You can pay a month at a time, and the first month you don't like it, you can get your money back. Just go to investtalk.com and scroll to the bottom of the page. So let's get to work right now answering questions. That's what we like to do. You can get through to me during the hour at 888-99-CHART. 888-992-4278. If you'd like to get a question between times, call the same number. So let's take this question that came in before today's program.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Gwen from Massachusetts. I heard Steve talking or answering a question about how advisors charge fees versus commissions and so on and so forth. And he mentioned things like 12b1 fees and various commissions advisors can get from the investments that they make for you or they put you in, and versus you guys who don't. Anyways, the question is, how is that done? How can I know that my advisor is or isn't taking those commissions? And is that a class of share that you buy in the mutual fund? Is that like an A share versus a whatever, another share? Second question, if the commission doesn't go to the advisor, I assume that it gets added in to the yield of the fund. Then the question is, when they quote you a yield for a particular fund, historically, are they talking about what numbers are they talking about? The yield with the fees going to advisors or the yield with the fees going to the client or to the owner? Very confusing to me. Maybe it's a non-question. Sorry if it is. Anyways, thanks a lot. Appreciate the show a lot. I listen every day. Thanks.
Okay, let's talk about that. Fees. If you go to an advisor and they sell mutual funds, they can go out and buy mutual funds that are different share classes, A share, B share, C shares, or they can buy pure no-load funds, meaning no commissions. Okay, so you want to know what your advisor, if he's buying your mutual funds, what kind are they? Are they no-load, which means no commissions, or are they loaded funds? A shares usually means they get 5% of the money you put into it. They get it up front, 5%. That's the commission. Okay, the load, they call it. B shares is usually 1% a year for 5 years. So it's different. 12B1 fees are kind of more hidden. You have to ask. You get to ask, are you getting 12B1 fees from these mutual funds? They're kind of through the back doors, not as clear. And it's not the same as a commission or load. So you can have a mutual fund that has both commission or loads and 12b1 fees. Okay, when mutual fund is quoting performance, they don't consider commissions at all. So it's performance without any consideration to the commission. It's pure performance. It won't be your performance. If you paid a 5% upfront load, your performance would be 5% less than the actual performance of that portfolio that first year. Okay, so that's how that works. You have to kind of ask your advisor. They're supposed to tell you the truth. But then you can see the fund itself and see if it's an A share, B share, C shares, or no load fund. You know, you can also call a fund family and ask them, are you a loaded fund or not? I mean, it's everywhere on the website. You can find it. Go to Morningstar. It's there. So that's how some certified financial planners and advisors get paid. It's not that they shouldn't get paid. They should get paid. I just want you, the public, to understand how they get paid. A registered investment advisor firm like mine, well, we don't get anything from mutual funds, 12b1 fees, or we don't get anything from anybody. What we do is charge you a small quarterly percent every quarter. That's how we get paid. And that's a pretty common method. Don't think it's not. It is. Okay? I hope that's clear. If it's not, email me, call me. I'll make it clear. If it kills me, I'll make it clear. Okay? 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. The market had a little rally today, so the week, the market was up a little bit, not a lot. It started out Monday, big up day, but it gave it all back on Tuesday, and then a little bit more on Wednesday, and then yesterday. Yeah, a little bit, and then up a little bit today. So, the Dow was up 69 points today. The NASDAQ up 15, the S&P up 8. Another week in which the market is, if you go look at it, go back a month, it's down for the month. You go back for the year, S&P 500, it's down for the year. Not a lot, though. Just down. Pretty bad market for the year. And I have speculated that it might be all about the Fed and its efforts to raise rates, wants to raise rates, interest rates, and may well raise interest rates in September. We'll see. We'll see if they will or not. They really have no reason to raise rates. They really don't. Matter of fact, I think it's detrimental if they do. But I have a feeling they're going to do it. Anyways, what are we going to talk about today? Well, there's lots of things we're going to discuss. Investors' attention turns away from the Fed policy this week and turned toward China. Well, if interest rates are going to rise, how high, how soon, how far? And should they? I don't think they should. Will they? If they do, it's going to be very, very mild. But I think the Fed has painted itself in a corner, and they have to kind of raise rates at least once. But we don't know that. But that's going to be one of our talking points today. Also want to talk about some economic numbers that came out this morning. The producer price index, industrial production, capacity utilization, yesterday's retail sales number. I want to talk about them a little bit. We haven't really discussed that. And why oil is going to stay around 40 to 50 bucks a barrel. Can it get up to 60? Sure. But there's long-term reasons for it not to rise, and I don't think it is. I think it's going to stay fairly low. And we'll talk about why. It's interesting what's going on in the oil industry. It used to be OPEC controlling the price, and OPEC, and in particular Saudi Arabia, who would increase and decrease supplies and try to maintain a balance on the price. Well, I don't think they can do that anymore. They chose not to do it recently. Going to be interesting. But so who's the swing producer these days of oil? Those are the things. Oh, one more thing I haven't got to yet, and I've been trying to get to it all week, is giving away retirement cash to the younger generation. I want to discuss that. Do you think there's more young people, children, when I say younger generation, supporting the elder parents, or the elder parents supporting their adult middle-aged children? Which way do you think the money's flowing? And I know you have questions. So go ahead and pick a question that you want to ask. You want to talk about bonds, ETFs? Do you want to own one or the other? What's the difference between the two? Well, we'll talk about that. Your questions will keep me on topic of what you're interested in your mind, not mine. What money matter do you need to know more about? So let's hear from you. 888-99-CHART. That's how you can get through right now.
Hello, this is Josh calling from Seattle. Enjoy the show as always. I had a quick question about Applied Materials, ticker AMAT. Looks like a really great company. It's at a 52-week low here. Just get your thoughts on that one. Holding time for the next 20 years or so. Thanks a lot again. Bye.
Applied Materials, manufactured inspection and etching equipment, cleaning equipment used in, you know, flat panel displays, fabrication, Applied Materials. I never recommend any tech company, or very few, rarely, not even Apple, is a 20-year hold. Why? Because technology changes so fast. It's difficult for them to keep up. So you got to be really, really careful. Applied Materials is a really good company. They're a $20 billion company. They pay a nice dividend, 2.4%. They're growing their sales 15 to 20%. Why did it get a big hit downward today? Well, it's went down 41 cents to $16.64. Why? Because it missed its numbers. Okay, it didn't miss it by a lot, but it missed its numbers that everybody expected. But it's still growing its sales and growing its earnings. So it's a good, solid company. And the question is this the bottom? I think it's getting very, very close. But I still think you want to wait till it breaks above its 20-day moving average on the upside, because it's been pretty much below that for months now. So let's wait till it breaks up a little bit. And today, the 20-day moving average is $17.32, somewhere around there at $16.64. So it's not even a lot. I'm asking you to wait. I would like to see you buy it on some strength. So wait till it settles down and buy it on some little bit of strength. It's a very solid company, 18% return on equity, not much debt. Mutual funds are net buyers in the last year. It's a good, solid company. And you want to buy it cheap, and this is around where you want to buy it cheap. So let's wait till it settles, goes sideways. You know, what was interesting is it went down close to 1620 or so today and then came back, but still closed down. It's 41 cents for the day. So it was much worse during the day, but it came back. So I think other people are thinking the same thing you are. Looks awful and expensive. It's going to make $1.46 next year, make $1.23 this year, made $1.07 last year, 59 cents a year before. It's going in the right direction. Applied Materials, AMAT. Well, what happened to the market today? It was up 69 points on the Dow. So, but it was weak for much of the day. The entire market was weak for much of the day. And you can actually say that for much of the week. The only day it was strong was Monday, and that was because of the Chinese currency manipulation. But that quickly faded the Tuesday, and it gave back all those gains. So the market still looks decidedly weak. I guess that's the only way I can describe it. So don't get too excited about jumping in if you have money on the sidelines or you see some stocks like Applied Materials that look pretty cheap. There's a lot of them. How about the oil sector? You want to look for stocks that seem to be fairly inexpensive. Big oil seems to be pretty cheap. But, of course, look what's happened. If you take a look at them, they looked cheap a month ago, and they got cheaper. Okay, so don't think that's why you always want to like to see the bottom put in, at least. You may be wrong. It may retest and go down further, but you at least like to see it start to up from the bottom. We might be seeing that in some of the big oils, but we'll see. We have to wait a little longer. News from Financial Headlines on InvestTalk.com. Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway, Inc., on Friday said it boosted its stake in cable TV operator Charter Communications Corporations and signaled it may have another large investment planned. It's Warren Buffett. Should that be of interest to you? Let's talk about it. 888-99-CHART.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. Investors are rolling their former 401k plans into an IRA. And now they're in the driver's seat. The money is flowing out of 401ks. That's our talking point for Monday's podcast. Bring your questions and join us then.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Why rates won't rise much. Interest rates. The Federal Reserve Bank policy coming up in September, and they have another one in December, and everybody's speculating they're going to raise rates in one of those two times, probably in September, unless the jobs numbers come in poorly the next time. So that's what everybody's talking about, and I think they will raise rates. I don't think they should. I want to make it clear. I don't think they should. But I think they will raise rates because they're so low and the Fed wants some ammunition to fight the next recession. I also think the next rate increase is kind of built into the stock market already. I don't think raising rates will do much to the stock market. Now, I also believe that it's just going to be maybe one and done. I don't think our economy can handle much more than that. And if you think about it, you know, even though our rates are really, really low on our treasuries and so on and so forth, they're much higher than many large economies around the world. Germany, England, all those countries, our rates are higher. Our 10-year treasuries, 30-year treasuries, they pay a lot more than theirs do. Even the weak European countries, where our rates are higher. So you can, it's a strong argument for why, you know, why would the Fed raise rates? And if the Fed raise rates, doesn't that make our exports more expensive? And do we really, can we really afford that? No. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Usually the Federal Reserve will raise rates to slow down an overheated economy. Do you think we have an overheated economy? The other reason they raise rates, to slow down inflation, which usually comes with an overheated economy. We had inflation numbers this morning. There's no inflation. Nothing. We're not even reaching their minimum that they want. So why in the world are they talking about raising rates? And the only reason I can think of, the only one that's plausible, is because they want higher rates. They want to normalize the rates so they can fight the next recession. They want to normalize the rates without causing any disruptions in our economy or even the stock market. They would like to do that, but it's going to be difficult. So, I think they will raise rates. I think they may do it once and be done for a long period of time. They could say that they're, you know, that's all they're going to do for the time being and let further economic activity dictate what they're going to do. I don't think it's going to hurt the market. I don't. You know, you might have one day or 2 days of volatility. But, you know, long term, and I've been saying this for a while, I'm talking about over the next 5-10 years, interest rates will probably creep up. The odds are good that they'll creep up over long periods of time. Now, it doesn't mean they won't go down in the short term, the next year, 2 years, 3 years. Yeah, they can. Yeah, I don't know. No one has a crystal ball to know where anything goes. Where's the stock market going to go, the bond market, interest rates? No one has that crystal ball. Everybody thinks they might have it, but they really don't. And I don't either. I don't profess to have it. I don't. Anyways, that's about our talk about interest rates, you know, where they're going to go. Actually, if the Federal Reserve raise rates, by the way, I really don't think it's going to make mortgage rates go up. I think they've already gone up a little bit, and probably is where they're going to be for the time being. Don't save your questions. If you have a question that is about the basics, we're here for you, whether you're an experienced investor or beginner, 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Steve and or Justin. My name is Brian from Palo Alto, California. I have a question regarding DFA, U.S. Core Equity, 1, institutional. Its ticker is DFEOX. I own it in a managed 60-40 portfolio. It represents about 25% of my portfolio, approximately $36,000. It cost me a negligible transaction fee to purchase. With so much in one fund, am I taking too much risk? I wonder how it has performed in the past, what you think of it for the future, and what it yields over the course of a year. Thank you very much.
Okay, this fund really tracks the overall market and has done so for some time. It's called the DFA U.S. Core Equity One Portfolio. So it has a lot of core stocks in it, obviously, and it's tracking the market. So it's an index, you know, not it's not an index fund, but it tracks an index, which is the S&P 500. Okay, so it just follows it on up and down. So that is it too much? No. No, you know, it's a core equity fund. As long as you're comfortable with the risk of the stock market, then you would be comfortable with this fund. So, you know, there's no reason for you to, you know, to be, well, gee, I've got too much money in this one fund. Well, it runs a lot around the market. I'm going back years and seeing how far back I can go and say, yeah, it just, yeah, bottom in 2008, just like the market did. And I mean, bottom right at the beginning of 2009 and just followed the market on up. Yeah, so it's going to track the S&P 500. Just think in those terms. Okay? Coming up next on Invest Talk Close Up, we'll look at the media sector and why media companies are struggling. And we're always open to your questions. 888-99-CHART.
Good advice. Spread your money around. Stick to a well-thought-out plan for carefully divvying up your money so no single calamity will destroy your portfolio. Want to talk about it? 888-99-CHART is how to get through right now.
So, why do I think $40 a barrel of oil is pretty much here to stay? Why? It might, you know, go to 45, 50. Yeah. I'm thinking 40 to 50 bucks, you know, it's going to be around. Can it go higher? Of course. And can it go lower? Of course. But, you know, I think that's going to be about the mark that's going to hang around for a while. And what's really interesting is, do you remember Saudi Arabia decided several months ago that they were not, I mean, this is what, 8 months ago, 9 months ago, that they were not going to reduce production to support oil prices? And of course, oil prices fell and collapsed pretty hard. And because they said, and I think they're right, that they didn't want to lose any market share and no one else was doing it. And no one, you know, they're not getting help by other OPEC countries, and they're not. And, you know, just because they're the largest producer doesn't mean they want to lose market share to other producers. So Saudi Arabia has always been the swing state, the swing producer, up and down trying to help maintain prices. Well, guess who's the swing producer now? The United States is, with our shale over oil production. And unlike Saudi Arabia, which, you know, was a swing producer as a result of policy decisions, the United States is going to be the swing producer as a result of market conditions. Oil prices go up, the United States will start drilling for more oil. As oil prices go down, they'll stop. So it's going to be more supply-demand driven, which I think is healthier, and it should be. So, you know, the dynamics of the market has changed dramatically, the production. And now supply and demand is going to be playing a much bigger part, as opposed to, you know, OPEC deciding to pump more or not pump more. And that changes the politics in the Middle East. If you think about it, it changes the politics. And I think, you know, it probably changes in the long run for the good. We are not going to be so dependent. The West is not going to be so dependent on Middle Eastern oil. Now Middle Eastern oil is going to be dependent on themselves trying to make money. So, because remember, Saudi Arabia made the Arab Spring, where there's all these wanting to overthrow all these governments, and everybody thought, our politicians all thought that was a good idea. Well, what the result is that a lot of these oil-rich companies gave a lot of goodies away to their citizens to keep them happy, meaning that their budgets have been blown, and they need to produce oil to kind of continue to maintain all that money they're spending. So I think we're going to have a lot of supply for a long time. And we're not even talking about Iran. And if that deal goes through, how much oil they can produce. I don't think they're going to produce as much as everybody thinks they are, but they can produce more oil. That's another. You have a world economy the growth has been downgraded by the International Monetary Fund. So if the growth of the world economy is slowing, demand for oil is going to go down. It's just, you know, all the things are lined up to tell us that oil prices are not going to be high. We're going to see some continued lower prices. And as oil prices are low, gasoline prices are low, and that probably means more demand, and that means the prices will probably start to rise slowly. Supply and demand. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. You can disagree with me. You don't have to agree with me. There's people that don't think I'm always right, and I know I'm not always right. So give me a call if you want to take the other side of that. If you have a question, we're ready to hear from you anytime, 888-99-CHART. If you're listening to our podcast and we're not live at the time, you still can get us your question by calling the same number, 888-992-4278.
Hey, this is Ben calling from Fort Collins, Colorado. I am a sophomore in college currently, and I was thinking about starting to invest in some stocks in the stock market, and I was wondering what kind of advice you would give to a younger person that wanted to get started out, and how much you think would be a good initial value to start investing. So if you could answer that, that would be great. Thank you.
If you were going to just start out, you don't know a lot about the market, the best place probably to start, in my personal opinion, is buy an index fund, maybe an exchange-traded fund of the S&P 500, the Dow or the NASDAQ, the Russell 2000. Each one of those has an ETF, and you can start off with just a couple $100, $300. You don't have to have a lot of money. Now, most young people want to buy a stock. They want to buy Google or Netflix or Facebook or whatever. And what I will suggest to you is that you may get a home run with that, or it may just lose a ton of money. The problem with buying just one stock is it's very high risk. If you're going to start buying individual stocks, you need to buy 15, 20 of them over different sectors. You want to manage the risk. Otherwise, you stick with an index that holds a whole group of stocks. So that's why I recommend is an index when you first start out. Just learn more over years. You'll get better and better and better of understanding what's going on, and then you can branch out from there. If you have a question, we're ready. What's on your mind? I want to hear from you. 888-99-CHART. You still call right now. It's time for InvestTalk Close-Up, a closer look at an industry or sector that's making some big changes. This is from a U.S. News report. Observers say that anxiety over the grim prospects of cable TV, known anecdotally as cutting the cord, lie at the heart of last week's stock market tumble in this sector. Major media stocks took their worst weekly tumble in nearly a decade. And remember, that's saying something in a market who's not been flat all year. The wounded include Walt Disney. Remember, Walt Disney is a big cable company. That was down 9%. Discovery Communications down 5%. 21st Century Fox down 7%. EW Scripps and Company, SSP, down 8%. Viacom, the home of the cable channels MTV, Comedy Central, BET, and Nickelodeon, they went down more than 19%. Because the viewing habits are changing out there. The younger generation watch their phone, their tablet, or TV on demand, what they want to see. They don't turn on a station and just watch what's there. And that doesn't mean that all these companies are going to go out of business or anything, because there's still going to be demand for content. Disney, I think, is in a pretty good position, especially with ESPN, that ESPN franchise, because everybody's still going to want to watch sports. And I think that's content developers are going to be pretty much in demand still. So it's not going to kill all the cable companies, just those who are just reliant just strictly on their cable as a way that they spread their content. And that's InvestTalk Close-Up. If you have questions about how to respond to the market news or any money questions, we're here right now, 888-99-CHART, or you can write me a note. Just click on Contact Steve and send it to InvestTalk.com.
Friday is Premium Newsletter Day. Why not broaden your investing knowledge and gain some perspective, too, on the week's financial news? Try our weekly newsletter. One of the most popular features is the Stock Watch, which highlights two stocks worth a second look. Subscribe today on InvestTalk.com.
Hi, this is John from Atlanta, Georgia. I listen by podcast. My question is about the healthcare REIT, symbol HCN. I just wanted to get your opinion on its value and what you think about investment in that REIT in the long term. Thanks so much. Great program. Bye.
Well, kind of long term, I like it. I like it. HCN, Healthcare REIT, Inc., a REIT, a real estate investment trust that invests in healthcare and senior housing facilities located in 44 streets, D.C., United Kingdom, and Canada. I'm looking at the numbers. They're growing nicely. Their earnings 5 to 6% per year, very consistent. They're growing their sales 10 to 15% per quarter, very consistent. Return on equity is very low, which is not a good thing, 3%. Management doesn't own much. Mutual funds are buyers. It doesn't have, for a REIT, maybe REITs buy properties, and so they have a lot of debt. This one has debt, but it doesn't have nearly as much as other REITs. It pays a 4.9% dividend. It's selling for $67. Remember, to be a REIT, they have to pay out 90% of their earnings in the form of a dividend to you, the shareholder, to qualify as a REIT. And if you qualify as a REIT, you don't have to pay corporate income tax. Okay? So that's what. Now, here's what I don't like about them. Is they continue in 2014 and even this year to issue more shares. Continuing to issue more shares. That means they're producing money. Why? That dilutes you. Dilutes you, the shareholder. If they're producing money by issuing shares to buy more properties, I can accept that. Okay. Meanwhile, the stock itself looks like it's put in a bottom right around $66 or so, $65, $50, $66. It's at $67.93, and it's been kind of bouncing along there for a couple, 3 months. This might be a good entry point. You know, it might be a good place to get in. If you're patient, you know, you get 5% dividend yield, and it's probably a slow grower. But before I would make the decision, I definitely want to check out why are they issuing more shares and what are they doing with that money. Now, remember, their debt is not that high, so maybe that's how they're funding, you know, expansion, which is okay. You don't mind that. As long as they manage the debt and don't, you know, expand that way, I'm okay with that. So that's HCN, Healthcare REIT, everybody. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Economic numbers out today. We had the producer price index. That's an inflation gauge at the producer or wholesale level. And it was up 0.2%. They expected it to be up 0.1%. And just as a reminder, last month it was up 0.4%. So last month was a little bit worrying and saying, okay, are we dealing with inflation? Apparently not, because it's only up 0.2% this month. Industrial, and that's a producer price index. We're going to get the consumer price index next week. And I have a feeling that's going to show very low inflation as well. Industrial production was up more than expected and sharply up from last month, up 0.6%. They expected to be up 0.4%. And last month, it was only up 0.1%. Capital utilization, up 78%. Last month, it was 77.7%. Came in very close to in line. And retail sales this week were up 0.6% for last month. It was only up 1%. It was just flat last month, up 0.6% this month. These numbers kind of indicate to me that the Fed may want to raise rates. This coming up. We'll see. You know, I think the key will be the jobs report for August. Because the Fed is going to get to look at that before they make their decision. And you know, if they don't raise rates, I think that will surprise the market. I think that will. If they raise rates, I don't think the market's going to care much because they already expect it. Okay. Let's talk to Arias in Southern California. How are you doing, Arias?
Pretty good. What about you, Steve?
I'm good. I appreciate the call.
Quick question for you. Did you ever get a chance to see the CNB special, The House of Cards?
No, I did not.
That's all about the real estate debacle of what happened in 2000.
Oh, yeah.
But I thought it was very, very interesting how this whole thing came about.
Yeah.
And my question is, everybody from the interview, everybody from Greenspan and everybody, the financial, the real estate, and everybody didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
These mortgage-backed securities, these CDOs that was packaged.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Now, my question is this. Let's say, hypothetically, we didn't have that stimulus package. No TARP, nothing, and we let the so-called too-big-to-fail banks fail.
Mm-hmm.
What would have happened to the economy? What would have happened to your business? And let's say that these banks went under. Could we have recovered?
Definitely we would have recovered, Arias, but we probably would have fell into a depression like in the 1930s. Because that's really what happened in the 1930s. They let the banks fall. They let them collapse. There was no mechanism to help, to prevent it. And the banks collapsed. And it took years for us to cut back, you know, get back to any kind of semblance of economic growth. After, you know, 25% higher unemployment rate, that's probably what would have happened. No one really knows, Arias. But remember, banks are like, think of it this way. Banks have the grease of the economy, and that means cash, money. And if that grease dries up, things start to come to a halt. I mean, payrolls. I can't meet my payroll because I have products out there, but no one's paid me yet, so I can't meet my payroll this week. So I'm going to have to lay off my employees for next week because until I get the money and I can't pay them. Well, the banks. Yeah, they give them short-term loans to cover those things. You know, so Arias, I would think we probably would have fell into even a deeper recession and probably a depression. But yeah, we would have survived. We would have.
How many years do you think it would have taken to come out of that hole?
5 to 10 years.
That's about what it's taking now, didn't it?
We started coming out of that hole the very next year.
Oh, okay.
But the problem is in this one, we have had the weakest recovery of any recession since the Great Depression.
True.
It's been a very weak recovery. Even with all that money that our government put out there, it helped. It really did work, but boy, it didn't. We were in such dire straits, it's not been that great. Yeah.
I appreciate that, Steve. Thanks,
Arias. I appreciate the call. We got time for your question before we're done for the day, or after hours, you can call the same number and, of course, leave your question, and we'll get to it on the next program. I'm financial advisor, registered investment advisor Steve Peasley, and you can reach me right now at 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. This is one of the few podcasts that lets you talk directly with the hosts. Professional financial advisors who are up for your questions. If you call between 4 and 5 p.m. any weekday, that's in the Pacific time zone, we'll hook you up with Steve and Justin. The toll-free number is 888-992-4278. That's 888-99-CHART.
888-992-4278. And you know that question from Arias about letting the banks just fail during the... I like that question. That's a thinking question. That's a question where you think about it and say, you know, what would have happened and should we have done it? And I'll say that I want to say that I think that the financial sector, the big banks, the too big to fail banks, they should have had a lot more pain. I think that all the CEOs and high executives there should have been fired. But there wasn't as much pain as there should have been, in my personal opinion. Because... you know, when you ruin a bank, a huge bank, and you're running the ground, and then you expect the government, and now I can't say they expected it to come in and save them. But when the government comes in and saves them, there's got to be a lot of pain. That's my money. I tax dollars you're spending there. So just thought I'd point that out. Anyways, giving away retirement cash. Older people give a lot more money to the younger generation than they get in help. For instance, 4% of the households with a member over 50 years old reports receiving cash, while 45% of households with a member over 50 years old gives money to the younger generation. So 4% receive it, 45% give it. Now, is there a problem with that? I don't mind people being generous. I want you to be generous. I like you to be generous. But I think you have to really be careful and think about your own future first, your retirement future first. Many people underestimate how much money they're going to need in retirement. Many people don't plan to have money to last till in their 80s and 90s. And health care is getting better and better and better. You may live into your hundreds. I have a feeling in the next 15, 20, 30 years, 100-year-olds is not going to be uncommon. You've got to make sure that money lasts. So before you give it away to your younger generation, make sure you have enough to do so. I am all for giving money to the younger generation before you pass away so we can avoid, you know, any kind of tax situation, you know. But be very, very careful. Be cognizant of that money. Let's get one more question in today if we can. You can call our number, anytime number, 888-99-CHART is the number. John called from Newport Beach, California.
I have an IRA. It's not a Roth, the regular IRA. I've had it in a mutual fund, dollar cost averaging for the last 15 years. Made quite a bit of money on it, but now I'm doing some real estate investing. I want to know if I take the money out, do a self-directed IRA. Number one, can I do that? And secondly, how long do I have to reinvest before I have to pay a penalty on it?
Okay, if you take money out of an IRA to buy real estate, that is doable. It is. You can buy investment real estate with IRA money, but it's complex and you can't do it on your own. You have to get a CPA involved. There has to be contracts between you and your IRA that you're buying an event. There's all kinds of rules and regulations you have to comply with. If you take money out of your IRA before you retire and don't put it back and don't have some kind of system to put it back and use it for property, they're going to cut, they meaning the IRS, is going to say it was a distribution. They're going to add it to your adjusted gross income and you're going to have to pay income tax on it. So be very, very careful with that. But yes, the answer is yes, you can use IRA money to buy property in the IRA. It has to be in the, you know, from the IRA and in the IRA. You can't take it out and just go do it, though. Be very, very careful here. You can buy your own, you can borrow money from your IRA anytime you want to. You can borrow money from it. But again, it's got to be arm's length. You got to pay it back. So there's things you can do, but you can't do them just on your own and just say, well, that's what I'm going to do. No, the IRS will come after you. You got to have that, do it in conjunction with your CPA, and you know, your certified public accountant, your accountant. Make sure that you're doing it the right way. And yeah, I have no problem buying properties if that's what you want to do. We're out of time, everybody, for the day. I'm financial advisor, registered investment advisor, Steve Peasley. And for Justin Klein, everybody at KPP Financial, I want to thank you for listening today. And I really hope you have a great weekend. And let's meet up again on Monday or anytime on InvestTalk.com.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.